neck. She added the oddly shaped glittering stone to the red-stained oval of mammoth tusk, the fossil cast of a gastropod, and the lump of red ochre. Her heart pounding with fear and one desperate hope, Ayla started down to the cave of the clan.
Chapter 21.
Uba came running into the cave, gesticulating wildly.
Mother! Mother! Ayla's back!
Issa's face drained. No, it can't be. Is the baby with her? Uba, did you go to see her? Did you tell her?
Yes, Mother. I saw her. I told her how mad Brunn was. I told her not to come back, the girl motioned.
Issa hurried to the entrance and saw Ayla walking slowly toward Brunn. She crumpled to the ground at his feet, leaning forward over her infant, protectively.
She's early. She must have misjudged the time,
Brunn motioned to the magician, hurriedly shuffling out of the cave.
She didn't misjudge, Brunn. She knows it's early. She came back on purpose, Mogur signaled.
The leader eyed the old man, wondering how he could be so positive. Then he glanced down at the young woman, and back at Mogur a little apprehensively.
Are you sure the charms you made to protect us will work? She should still be isolated. Her female curse cannot be over yet. It's always much longer after giving birth.
The charms are strong, Brunn, made from the bones of Ursus. You are protected. You may see her, the magician replied.
Brunn turned back and stared at the young woman huddled over her infant, quaking with fear. I should curse her right now, he thought angrily, but it's not the child's naming day. If Mogur is right, why did she come back early, and with the baby? He must still be alive, or she wouldn't have him with her. Her disobedience is unforgivable, but why did she come back early? His curiosity was too much for him. He tapped her on the shoulder. This unworthy woman has been disobedient, Ayla began, with a silent formal motions, not looking directly at him, and not sure he would respond. She knew she shouldn't be trying to talk to a man. She should be in isolation. But he had tapped her shoulder. This woman would speak to the leader, if it were allowed.
You don't deserve to speak, woman, but Mogur has invoked protection in your case. If I want you to speak, the spirits will allow it. You are right. You have been very disobedient. What do you have to say for yourself?
This woman is grateful. This woman knows the customs of the clan. She should have disposed of the infant, as the medicine woman told her. But she ran away. She was going to return on her son's naming day, so the leader would have to accept him into the clan.
You return too soon, Brunn gestured triumphantly. It is not the naming day yet. I can command the medicine woman to take him from you now.
The tension that had knotted Brunn's back since Ayla left relaxed as he made the motions, and the full realization hit him. Only if the child lived 7 days would tradition force him to accept the baby. The full time had not elapsed. He did not have to take him. He had not lost face. He was in command again. Ayla's arms clutched involuntarily at the baby held to her breast with a cloak. Then she continued,
This woman knows it is not yet the naming day. This woman realized it was wrong for her to try to make the leader accept her son. It is not a woman's place to decide if her child should live or die. Only the leader can make that decision. That is why this woman returned.
Brunn looked at Ayla's earnest face. At least she came to her senses in time, he thought.
If you know the customs of the clan, why did you return with a child that is deformed? Issa said you were unable to perform your duty as a mother. Are you ready to give him up now? Do you want the medicine woman to do it for you?
Ayla hesitated, hovering over her son.
This woman will give him up. If the leader commands it.
She made the sign slowly, painfully, forcing herself, feeling as though a knife were twisting in her heart.
But this woman promised her son she would not let him go alone to the world of the spirits. If the leader decides the baby may not live, she asks him to curse her.
She slipped out of the formal language and pleaded,
I beg you, Brunn, I beg you to let my son live. If he has to die, I don't want to live.
Ayla's fervent plea surprised the leader. Some women, he knew, wanted to keep their babies in spite of malformations and disfigurements, but most were relieved to dispose of them as quickly and quietly as possible. A deformed child stigmatized the mother. It advertised a certain inadequacy,
an inability to produce a perfect baby. It made her less than desirable. Even if the deformity was small enough not to pose a major handicap, there were considerations of status and future mates. A mother's later years could be difficult if her children or her children's mates could not take care of her. Though she would never starve, her life could be miserable. Ayla's request was unprecedented. Mother love was strong, but strong enough to follow her child to the next world? You want to die with a deformed baby? Why? Brunn asked. My son is not deformed, Ayla motioned, with the barest trace of defiance. He's just different. I'm different. I don't look like people of the clan. My son is, too. Any baby I ever have will look like him, if my totem is ever defeated again. I'll never have a baby that will be allowed to live. I don't want to live either, if all my babies have to die. Brunn looked at Mogur. If a woman swallows the spirit of a man's totem, shouldn't the baby look like him? Yes, it should. But don't forget, she has a male totem, too. Perhaps that's why it fought so hard. The cave lion may have wanted to be part of the new life. There could be something to what she says. I would have to meditate on it. But the child is still deformed. It often happens when a woman's totem refuses to give in completely. It makes her pregnancy difficult and deforms the baby, Mogur replied. I'm more surprised the child was male. If a woman's totem puts up a strong fight, it usually makes the child female. But we haven't seen him, Brunn. Perhaps we should examine him. Should he bother? Brunn wondered. Why not just curse her now and dispose of the baby? Ayla's early return and penitent groveling eased Brunn's wounded pride, but he was far from mollified. He had come too close to losing face because of her, and it wasn't the first problem she had caused him. She had returned, but what would she do next? And then there was the clan gathering, as Braud had reminded him so many times. It was one thing to let Issa pick up a strange child and take her into his clan, but Brunn had cause to reflect often lately on the impression it would make on the other clans to arrive at the meeting with a woman born to the others. He wondered, looking back, how he had made so many decisions that were so unorthodox. Each one at the time didn't seem too unreasonable. Even allowing the woman to hunt was logical then. But added together, and seeing them from an outsider's point of view, the effect was an overwhelming breach of custom. Ayla had been disobedient. She deserved to be punished, and cursing her would eliminate all his worries. But a death curse was a serious threat to the clan, and he had already exposed them once to evil spirits because of her. Her voluntary return had prevented his disgrace. Issa was probably right. She had lost her mind temporarily from the shock and the pain. He did tell Issa he would have considered a request to let the baby live if he had been asked. Well, she did ask. She came back knowing the full extent of her offense, knowing it and willing to face it, begging for the life of her child. He could at least examine the baby. Brunn did not like making hasty decisions. He gave Ayla an abrupt signal, motioning toward Kreb's hearth, then strode away. Ayla ran into Issa's waiting arms. If nothing else, at least she would see the woman who was the only mother she knew one last time. You've all had a chance to examine him, Brunn said. Under normal circumstances, I would not bother you. It would be a simple decision. But I want to know your opinions. A death curse is a strong possibility, and I don't like exposing the clan to evil spirits again. If you find the boy is acceptable, I can hardly curse the mother. Without her, another woman would have to take him. He'd have to live with one of you whose mate has a nursing child. If the baby is allowed to live, the punishment for Ayla should be less severe. Tomorrow is the naming day. I need to make the decision soon, and Mogur will need some time to prepare for a curse if that is to be her punishment. It must be done before the sun rises in the morning. It's not only his head, Brunn, Krug started. Ika was still nursing her youngest, and Krug had no desire to have Ayla's infant added to his hearth, far-fetched though the possibility was. That's bad enough, but he can't even hold it up. It has to be supported. What will he be like when he's a man? How will he hunt? He'll never be able to provide for himself. He'd only be a burden on the whole clan. Do you think there's any chance his neck will get stronger? Drug asked. If Ayla dies, she will take part of Ona's spirit with her. Aga would take her son.
She feels she owes Ayla that much, though I don't think she really wants a deformed baby. If she's willing, I suppose I would be too, but not if he will burden the whole clan. His neck is so long and scrawny, and his head is so big. I don't think it will ever be strong enough, Krug commented. I won't have him at my hearth for any reason. I wouldn't even bother to ask Oga how she feels about it. He's not fit to be a sibling to her sons. It would make him a brother to Brock and Grev. I won't allow that. Brock will survive, even if she does take a little piece of his spirit with her. I don't know why you're even considering it, Brunn. You were ready to curse her. Just because she came running back a little early, you're ready to take her back, and talking about taking her defective son besides, Brown gestured bitterly. She defied you by running away. Coming back doesn't make her disobedience any less. What's there to discuss? The baby is deformed, and she should be cursed. That's the end of it. Why do you always waste our time with these meetings about her? If I were leader, she would have been cursed already. She's disobedient, she's insolent, and she's a bad influence on the other women. How else can you explain Issa's misbehavior? Proud was working himself up to a fury, his gestures becoming more excited. She deserves to be cursed, Brunn. How can you think of anything else? Why can't you see it? Are you blind? She's never been any good. If I were leader, she would never have been accepted in the first place. If I were leader— But you're not leader yet, Proud, Brunn returned coldly. And you're not likely to be if you can't keep yourself under better control. She's only a woman. Proud, why do you feel so threatened by her? What can she possibly do to you? She must obey you. She has no choice. If you were leader, if you were leader, is that all you can say? What kind of leader is so anxious to kill a woman that he's willing to jeopardize the whole clan? Brunn was on the edge of losing control himself. He had put up with all he could take from the son of his mate. The men were shocked and uneasy. An open battle between the present leader and the future one was distressing. Braud had overstepped his bounds, to be sure, but they were accustomed to his outbursts. It was Brunn who caused the dismay. They had never seen the leader so close to losing his control. And he had never before openly questioned the qualifications of the son of his mate to follow him as leader. For a tense moment, the two men locked eyes in a battle of wills. Braud looked down first. No longer jeopardized by loss of face, Brunn was firmly in control again. He was leader, and not ready to step down. It put the young man on his guard. His footing wasn't as secure as he thought. Braud fought down the feeling of impotence and bitter frustration that welled up inside. He still favors her, Braud thought. How can he? I'm the son of his mate. She's just an ugly woman. Braud struggled to remain calm, swallowing the bitterness that rankled his soul. This man regrets he has caused the leader to misunderstand him, Braud motioned formally. This man's concern is for the hunters he must lead one day. If the present leader thinks this man is capable of leading hunters, how can a man hunt if his head wobbles? Brunn stared hard and angrily at the young man. There was an inconsistency in the meaning of the formal gestures and the unconscious signals of expression and posture. Braud's overly polite response was sarcastic, and it irritated the leader far more than direct disagreement. Braud was trying to hide his feelings, and Brunn knew it. But Brunn was feeling shame at his own outburst. He knew it was prompted by Braud's increasingly derogatory remarks that cast doubt on his judgment. They had rubbed a sore spot on his pride. But that was no excuse for losing his own self-control enough to disparage the son of his mate so openly. You've made your point, Braud, Brunn signaled stiffly. I realize the baby will grow up to be more a burden to the leader who follows me and the one after. But the decision is still mine. I will do what I think best. I have not said the baby will be accepted, Braud, or that the woman will not be cursed. My concern is for the clan. Not her, or her child. A death curse can put everyone in danger. Lingering evil spirits can bring bad luck, especially since they've been released before. I think the child is too deformed to live, but Ayla is blind to her baby's affliction. She can't see it. It may be that her strong desire to have a child has affected her mind. When she returned, she begged me to curse her if her son was not acceptable. I asked for your opinions because I wanted to know if anyone else saw something about the infant that I didn't.
a death curse to punish her or to grant her request. It is still not a decision to make lightly.
Braud's frustration eased. Maybe Brunn isn't favoring her at all, he thought.
You're right, Brunn, he said contritely. A leader should think of the dangers to his clan. This young man is grateful for such a wise leader to instruct him.
Brunn felt his tension melt. He hadn't seriously considered replacing Braud, not ever. He was still the son of his mate, the child of his heart. Self-control isn't always easy, Brunn thought, remembering his own irritation. Braud just has a little more trouble than most, but he is improving.
I'm glad you understand that, Braud. When you are leader, you will be responsible for the safety and welfare of the clan.
Brunn's comment not only let Braud know he was still heir apparent, it relieved the rest of the hunters. They wanted the security of knowing that the traditional rightness of the clan hierarchy, and their own place in it, would be maintained. Nothing disturbed them quite so much as uncertainty about the future.
It is the welfare of the clan I was thinking about, Braud motioned. I don't want a man in my clan who can't hunt. What good will Ayla's son ever be? Her disobedience does deserve severe punishment, and if she wants to be cursed, it will satisfy her, too. We'd be better off without them. Ayla defied clan traditions deliberately. She doesn't deserve to live. Her son is so deformed, he doesn't deserve to live.
There was a general round of agreement. Brunn detected a certain element of insincerity in Braud's reasoned argument, but he let it go. The animosity between them had dissipated, and he didn't want to stir it up again. Open strife with the son of his mate disturbed Brunn as much as it did the others. The leader felt he should add his agreement, but something made him hesitate. It is the right thing to do, he thought. She's been a problem from the beginning. Of course, Issa will be upset, but I didn't promise to spare either of them. I only said I would consider it. I didn't even say I would look the baby if she returned. Whoever expected her to return anyway. That's just the problem. I never know what to expect from her. If the grief weakens Issa, well, there's still Uba. After all, she was the one born to the line, and she can get more training from the medicine women at the clan gathering. If the part of Brock's spirit she carries dies with Ayla, is it really so much of him to lose?
Braud isn't worried about it. Why should I worry?
He's right. She does deserve the severest punishment, doesn't she? Such strong love for a baby isn't even normal. What do old women's tales prove? She can't even see that her son is deformed. She must be out of her mind. Can there be that much pain in giving birth? Men have suffered worse, haven't they? Some have walked all the way back after a painful hunting injury. Of course, she's only a woman. She can't be expected to bear as much pain. I wonder how far she went. The cave she mentioned can't be that far, can it? She nearly died giving birth. She was too weak to travel very far. But why couldn't we find it? Besides, if she's allowed to live, I'll have to take her to the clan gathering. What would the other clans think? It would be worse if I allow her deformed child to live. It's the right thing to do. Everyone thinks so. Maybe there wouldn't be so much of a problem with Braud. Maybe he could control himself better if she wasn't around. He's a fearless hunter. He'd make a good leader if only he had a little more sense of responsibility, just a little more self-control. Maybe I should do it for Braud's sake. For the son of my mate, it might be better if she was gone. It is the right thing to do. Yes, it really is. It's the right thing to do, isn't it?
I have reached my decision, Brunn signaled. Tomorrow is the naming day. At first light, before the sun breaks,
Brunn, Mogur interrupted.
He had kept himself out of the discussion. None of them had seen much of him since the birth of Ayla's child. He had spent most of the time in his small annex, searching his soul for an explanation of Ayla's actions. He knew how hard she had struggled to accept the ways of the clan, and he thought she had succeeded. He was convinced there was something else, something he hadn't realized that had driven her to such an extreme.
Before you commit yourself, Mogur would speak.
Brunn stared at the magician. His expression was enigmatic as usual. Brunn had never been able to read Mogur's face. What can he say that I have not considered? I've made up my mind to curse her, and he knows it.
Mogur may speak, he motioned.
Ayla has no mate, but I have always provided for her. I am responsible for her. If you will allow it, I would speak as her mate.
Speak if you will, Mogur, but what can you add? I have already considered her strong love for the child and the pain and suffering she went through to have him. I understand how difficult it may be for Issa. I know it may weaken her too much. I've thought of every possible reason for excusing her actions, but the facts remain. She defied clan customs. Her baby is not acceptable to the men. Braud made it clear neither one deserves to live.
Magur pulled himself up to his feet, then threw his staff aside. Wrapped in his heavy bearskin cloak, the magician was an imposing figure. Only the older men and Brunn ever knew him as anything but Magur. The Magur, the holiest of all the men who interceded with the world of the spirits, the most powerful magician of the clan. When moved to eloquence during a ceremony, he was a charismatic, awe-inspiring protector. It was he who braved the invisible forces far more fearsome than any charging animal, forces that could turn the bravest hunter into a quaking coward. There was not a man present who did not feel more secure knowing it was he who was the magician of their clan. Not a man who hadn't stood in fear of his power and magic at some time in his life. And only one, Guv, who dared to think of trading places with him. Magur alone stood between the men of the clan and the terrible unknown, and he became part of it by association. It imbued him with a subtle aura that carried over into his secular life. Even when he sat within the boundaries of his hearthstones, surrounded by his women, he was not really thought of as a man. He was more than, other than. He was Magur. As the dread holy man fixed a baleful eye on each man in turn, there wasn't one, including Braud, who didn't squirm in the depths of his soul with the sudden realization that the woman they had condemned to die lived at his hearth. Magur seldom brought the force of his presence to bear outside his function, but he did then. He turned last to Brunn. A woman's mate has the right to speak for the life of a deformed child. I am asking you to spare the life of Ayla's son, and for his sake, I am asking that her life be spared too. All the reasons Brunn had so recently considered as rationale for sparing her life seemed to have far more weight now, and the arguments for her death insignificant. He almost agreed on the force of Mogur's request alone, and it attested to the strength of his own character that he did not. But he was leader. He could not capitulate so easily in front of all his men, and despite a strong desire to give in to the force of the powerful man of magic, he held firm. When Magur saw the look of firm resolution replace the moment of indecision, the magician seemed to change before Brunn's eyes. The otherworldly character left him. He became a crippled old man in a bearskin cloak, standing as straight as his one good leg would hold him without his staff for support. When he spoke, it was with the common gestures, punctuated with the gruff words of everyday speech. His face held a determined, yet strangely vulnerable look.
Brunn, ever since Ayla was found, she has lived at my hearth. I think everyone will agree that women and children look to the man of their hearth to set the standard for men of the clan. He is their model, their example of what a man should be. I have been Ayla's example. I have set the standard in her eyes. I am deformed, Brunn. Is it so strange that a woman who grew up with a deformed man as her model would find it difficult to understand a deformity in her child? I lack an eye and an arm. Half my body is shriveled and wasted. I am half a man. Yet from the beginning, Ayla has seen me as whole. Her son's body is sound. He has two eyes, two good arms, two good legs. How can she be expected to acknowledge any deformity in him? She was my responsibility to train. I must take the blame for her faults. It was I who overlooked her minor deviations from clan ways. I even convinced you to accept them, Brunn. I am Magur. You rely on me to interpret the wishes of the spirits, and you have come to rely on my judgment in other ways. I did not think we were so wrong. Sometimes it was difficult for her, but I thought she had become a good clan woman. I think now I was too lenient with her. I did not make her responsibilities clear. I seldom reprimanded her, and I never cuffed her. I often let her go her own way. Now she must pay for my lack. But, Brunn, I could not be harsher with her. I never took a mate. I could have chosen a woman, and she would have had to live with me, but I did not. Do you know why? Brunn, do you know how women look at me? Do you know how women avoid me? I had the same need to relieve myself as any other man when I was young, but I learned to control it when women turned their backs so they would not see me make the signal. I would not force myself, my crippled, deformed body, on a woman who shrunk from me, who turned away with disgust at the sight of me. But Ayla never turned from me. From the first, she reached out to touch me. She had no fear of me, no revulsion. She gave me her affection freely. She hugged me. Brunn, how could I scold her? I have lived with this clan since my birth, but I never learned how to hunt. How can a one-armed cripple hunt? I was a burden. I was taunted. I was called woman. Now I am Mogur, and no one ridicules, but no manhood ceremony was ever held for me. Brunn, I am not half a man. I am no man at all. Only Ayla respected me, loved me, not as a magician, but as a man, as a whole man. And I love her as the child of the mate I never had. Kreb shrugged off the cloak he wore to cover his lopsided, malformed, wasted body, and held out the stump of an arm he always hid. Brunn, this is the man Ayla saw as whole. This is the man who set her standard. This is the man she loves and compares with her son. Look at me, my brother. Did I deserve to live? Does Ayla's son deserve to live less? The clan started gathering outside the cave in the dim half-light of pre-dawn. A fine, misty drizzle cast a glistening sheen on rocks and trees and collected in tiny droplets in the hair and beards of the people. Thin, wispy tendrils snaking down from fog-shrouded mountains clung to hollows, and thicker masses of the ethereal vapor obscured all but the nearest objects. The ridge to the east rose indistinctly from a nebulous sea of mist in the fading darkness, wavering vaguely just on the edge of visibility. Ayla lay awake on her furs in the darkened cave, watching Issa and Uba moving silently about the hearth, stoking coals in the fireplace, and putting water on to boil for a morning tea. Her baby was beside her, making sucking noises in his sleep. She hadn't slept all night. Her first joy at seeing Issa had quickly given way to a desolate anxiety. Initial attempts at conversation broke down early, and the three females of Kreb's hearth spent the entire long day after Ayla's return within its boundary stones communicating their despair with anguished looks. Kreb had not set foot inside his domain, but Ayla caught his eye once as he left the small adjoining cave to join the men in the meeting Brunn had called. He looked away quickly from her silent appeal, but not before she had seen the look of love and pity in his soft, liquid eye. She and Issa exchanged a tremulous, knowing glance when they saw Kreb hurry into the place of the spirits after a talk with Brunn held in a remote section of the cave in guarded gestures. Brunn had made his decision, and Kreb went to prepare for his part in it. They did not see the magician again. Issa brought the young mother her tea in the familiar bone cup that had been hers for several years, then sat quietly beside her as she sipped it. Uba joined them, but she could offer no more than her presence for comfort either. "Nearly everyone is out. We'd better go," Issa signaled, taking the cup from the young woman. Ayla nodded. She got up and wrapped her son in the carrying cloak, then picked up her fur wrap from the bed and threw it over her shoulders. Eyes glistening with moisture that threatened to overflow, Ayla looked at Issa, then Uba, and with an aching cry, reached out to both of them. All three huddled in a clinging embrace. Then, with a heavy heart and dragging step, Ayla walked out of the cave. Staring down at the ground, seeing an occasional heel mark, the imprint of toes, the blurred outline of a foot encased in a loose leather covering, Ayla had the uncanny sensation that it was 2 years before, and she was following Kreb out of the cave to face her doom. "He should have cursed me forever that time," she thought. "I must have been born to be cursed. Why else must I go through this again? This time, I will go to the world of the spirits."
I know a plant that will make us both go to sleep and never wake up. Not in this world. I will get it over quickly, and we'll walk in the next world together.
She reached Brunn, dropped to the ground, and stared at the familiar feet wrapped in muddy foot coverings. It was getting lighter. The sun would soon be up. Brunn would have to hurry, she thought, and felt a tap on her shoulder. Slowly, she looked up at Brunn's bearded face. He began without preliminaries.
"Woman, you have willfully defied the customs of the clan, and you must be punished," he motioned sternly.
Ayla nodded. It was true.
"Ayla, woman of the clan, you are cursed. No one will see you. No one will hear you. You will endure the full isolation of the woman's curse. You may not go beyond the boundaries of your provider's hearth until the next moon is in the same phase as now."
Ayla gazed at the stern-faced leader with astonished disbelief. The woman's curse, not the death curse. Not utter and complete ostracism, but nominal isolation confined to Kreb's hearth. What did it matter that no one else in the clan would acknowledge her existence for an entire moon? She would still have Issa and Uba and Kreb. And afterward, she could rejoin the clan, just like any other woman. But Brunn was not through.
"As further punishment, you are forbidden to hunt, or even mention hunting, until the clan returns from the clan gathering. Until the leaves have dropped from the trees, you will have no freedom to go anywhere that is not essential. When you look for plants of healing magic, you will tell me where you are going, and you will return promptly. You will always ask my permission before you leave the area of the cave. And you will show me the location of the cave where you hid."
"Yes, yes, of course, anything." Ayla was nodding in agreement. She was floating in a warm cloud of euphoria. But the next words of the leader pierced her mood like an icy shaft of cold lightning, drowning her elation in a deluge of despair.
"There is still the problem of your deformed son, who was the cause of your disobedience. You must never again try to force a man, much less a leader, against his will." "No woman should ever try to force a man," Brunn said, then gave a signal.
Ayla clutched her infant desperately and looked in the same direction that Brunn was looking. She couldn't let them take him. She couldn't. She saw Mogur limping out of the cave. When she saw him throw his bearskin aside, revealing a red-stained wicker bowl held firmly between the stump of his arm and his waist, incredulous joy flushed her face. She turned back to Brunn hesitantly, unsure if what she thought could possibly be true.
"But a woman may ask," Brunn finished. "Mogur is waiting, Ayla. Your son must have a name if he is to be a member of the clan."
Ayla scrambled to her feet and raced to the magician, taking her baby from her cloak as she dropped at his feet and holding the naked infant up to him. His first squall at being taken from his mother's warm breast and exposed to the damp, cool air was greeted by the first rays of the sun breaking over the top of the ridge, burning through the misty haze. A name! She hadn't even thought about a name. She hadn't even wondered what name Kreb would choose for her son. In formal gestures, Mogur called the spirits of the clan's totems to attend, then reached into the bowl and scooped out a dab of red paste.
"Dirk," he said loudly above the lusty cries of the cold and angry baby. "The boy's name is Dirk."
Then he drew a red line from the junction of the baby's supraorbital ridges to the tip of his smallish nose. "Dirk," Ayla repeated, holding her son close to warm him. "Dirk," she thought, "like Dirk of the legend. Kreb knows that's always been my favorite." It was not a common clan name, and many were surprised. But perhaps the name, dredged from the depths of antiquity and fraught with dubious connotations, was appropriate for a boy whose life had hung in the balance of such uncertain beginnings.
"Dirk,"
Brunn said. He was the first to file past. Ayla thought she saw a glimmer of tenderness from the stern, proud leader as she looked at him in gratitude. Most of the faces were a blur seen through tear-filled eyes. As hard as she tried, she could not control them, and kept her head down in an effort to conceal her wet eyes. "I can't believe it. I just can't believe it," she thought. "Is it really true? You have a name, my baby? Brunn accepted you, my son? I'm not dreaming?" She remembered the glittering nodules of iron pyrite she had found and put in her amulet. It was a sign. Great cave lion, it was truly a sign.
Of all the artifacts in her amulet, she treasured that one the most. "Dirk," she heard Issa say, and looked up. The joy on the woman's face was no less than Ayla's, for all that her eyes were dry. "Dirk," Uba said, and added with a quick gesture, "I'm so glad."
"Dirk,"
it was said with a sneer. Ayla glanced up in time to see Braud turn away. She suddenly remembered the strange idea about the way men started babies she had while she was hiding in the small cave, and shuddered at the thought that somehow Braud was responsible for the conception of her son. She had been too busy to notice the battle of wills between Brunn and Braud. The young man was going to refuse to acknowledge the newest member of the clan, and only a direct order from the leader finally forced the issue. Ayla watched him walk away from the group with clenched fists and tense shoulders. How could he? Braud walked into the woods to get away from the hated scene. How could he? He kicked the log in vain attempt to vent his frustration, sending it rolling down a slope. How could he? He picked up a stout branch and sent it crashing into a tree. How could he? How could he? Braud's mind kept repeating the phrase as he smashed his fist again and again into a moss-covered bank. How could he let her live and accept her baby both? How could he do it? Chapter 22. Issa, come quick, it's Dirk. Ayla grabbed the medicine woman's arm and dragged her toward the entrance to the cave. What's wrong? The woman motioned, hurrying to keep up. Is he choking again? Is he hurt? No, he's not hurt. Look, Ayla gestured proudly when they reached Kreb's hearth. He's holding his head up. The infant was lying on his stomach, looking up at the two women with large, solemn eyes that were losing the dark, indistinct color of newborns and becoming the deep brown shade of people of the clan. His head bobbed with the effort, then dropped back down on the fur blanket. He shoved his fist in his mouth and began sucking noisily, oblivious of the stir his efforts had caused. If he can do it this young, he'll be able to support it when he grows up, won't he? Ayla pleaded. Don't build your hopes up yet, Issa replied. But it is a good sign. Kreb shuffled into the cave, staring into space with the unfocused, faraway look characteristic of him when lost in thought. Kreb, Ayla called, running up to him. Jolted back to reality, he looked up. Dirk held his head up, didn't he, Issa? The medicine woman nodded in agreement.
Humph, he grunted. If he's getting that strong, I think it's time.
Time for what?
I've been thinking I should have a totem ceremony for him. He's a little young, but I've had some strong impressions. His totem has been making himself known to me. There's no reason to wait. Later, everyone will be busy getting ready to leave, and I should do it before the clan gathering. It might be unlucky for him to travel if his totem doesn't have a home.
Seeing the medicine woman reminded him of something else.
Issa, do you have enough roots for the ceremony? I don't know how many clans will be there. Last time, one of the clans that moved to a cave farther east was thinking of going to a clan gathering south of the mountains. It would be a little farther away for them, but easier traveling. Their old Mogur was against it, but his acolyte wanted to go. Make sure you bring plenty.
I won't be going to the clan gathering, Kreb. Her disappointment was obvious. I can't travel that far. I'll have to stay behind. Of course. What's wrong with me, he thought, looking at the thin, nearly white-haired medicine woman. Issa can't go. Why didn't I think of that before? She's too sick. I thought she was going to leave us last fall. I don't know how Ayla pulled her through. But what about the ceremony? Only the women of Issa's line know the secret of the special drink. Uba's too young. It has to be a woman. Ayla. What about Ayla? Issa could teach her before we leave. It's time she was made a medicine woman anyway. Kreb watched the young woman as she stooped to pick up her son and suddenly saw her more critically than he had for years. But will they accept her? He tried to see her as the people of other clans would see her. Her golden hair hung loose around her flat face, tucked behind her ears, and parted haphazardly at the center, exposing her bulging forehead. Her body was definitely a woman's, but slender except for a slightly flaccid stomach. Her legs were long and straight, and when she stood up, she towered over him. She does not look like a clan woman, he thought. She's going to get a lot of attention, and not much of it favorable, I'm afraid. We just might have to forget that ceremony. The other Mogurs might not accept the drink if Ayla makes it. But it would not hurt to try. Only Uba were a little older. Maybe Issa could train them both though I don't think they'll be willing to accept a girl any more than a woman born to the others. I think I'll go talk to Brunn. If I'm going to call the spirits for Dirk's totem ceremony, we might as well make Ayla a medicine woman at the same time.
I must see Brunn, Kreb motioned abruptly, and started toward the leader's hearth.
He turned back to Issa.
I think you should teach both Ayla and Duba to make the drink, but I'm not sure it will do any good.
Issa, I can't find the bowl you gave me for the medicine woman of the host clan, Ayla gestured frantically, after pawing through piles of food, furs, and implements stacked on the ground near her sleeping place. I've looked everywhere.
You already packed it, Ayla. Settle down, child. There's still time. Brunn won't be ready to leave until he's through eating.
You'd better sit down and eat yourself. Your mush is getting cold.
Uba, you too. Issa shook her head.
I've never seen such carryings on. We went over everything last night. It's all ready.
Kreb was sitting on a mat, Dirk in his lap, watching the last-minute commotion with amusement.
They're not any different from you, Issa. Why don't you sit down and eat?
I'll have plenty of time after you leave, she replied.
Kreb propped the baby up against his shoulder. Dirk looked around from his new vantage point.
Look how strong that baby's neck is, Issa remarked. He doesn't have any trouble holding his head up now.
It's hard to believe. Ever since his totem ceremony, it's been getting stronger all the time.
Let me take him. I won't be able to hold him all summer.
Perhaps that's why the Grey Wolf wanted me to do it so soon, Kreb motioned. He wanted to help the boy.
Kreb sat back and watched the small brood over which he was patriarch. Though he kept it to himself, he had often longed for a family like the other men. Now, in his old age, he had two doting women who did everything they could to make him comfortable. A girl who was following in their footsteps, and a healthy baby boy to cuddle the way he had done with the two girls. He had talked to Brunn about the boy's training. The leader could not allow a male member of his clan to grow up without the necessary skills. Brunn had accepted the child, knowing he would be living at Kreb's hearth, and felt responsible for him. Ayla was grateful when Brunn announced at Dirk's totem ceremony that he would personally take charge of the baby's training if he became strong enough to hunt. She could think of no better man to train her son. The Grey Wolf is a good totem for the boy, Kreb mused, but it makes me wonder. Some wolves run with the pack, and some are loners. Which one is Dirk's totem? When everything was packed and secured in bundles and loaded on the backs of the young woman and the girl, they all trooped out of the cave together. Issa gave the baby a last hug while he nuzzled her neck, helped Ayla wrap him in the carrying cloak, and then took something from a fold of her wrap.
This is for you to carry now, Ayla. You are the medicine woman of the clan, Issa said, giving her the red-dyed bag that held the special roots. Do you remember every step? Nothing must be left out. I wish I could have shown you, but the magic can't be made just for practice. It's too sacred to be thrown away, and it can't be used for any ceremony, only very important ones. Remember, it's not just the roots that make the magic. You must prepare yourselves as carefully as you prepare the drink. Uba and Ayla both nodded as the young woman took the precious relic and put it in her medicine bag. Issa had given her the otter skin pouch the day she was made medicine woman, and it still reminded her of the one Kreb had burned. Ayla reached for her amulet and felt for the fifth object she carried in it now, a piece of black manganese dioxide nestled in the small pouch along with the three nodules of iron pyrite stuck together, a red-stained oval of mammoth ivory, the fossil cast of a gastropod, and a chunk of red ochre. Ayla's body had been marked with the black ointment made by crushing and heating the black stone and mixing it with fat when she became the repository of a part of the spirits of every member of the clan, and, through Ursus, of the entire clan. Only for the highest and holiest of rituals was a medicine woman's body printed with black marks, and only medicine women were allowed to carry the black stone in their amulets. Ayla wished Issa was going with them, and she worried about leaving her behind. Deep coughing spasms shook the fragile woman often. Issa, are you sure you're going to be all right? Ayla motioned after giving her a quick hug. Your cough is worse. It's always worse in winter. You know it gets better in summer. Besides, you and Duba collected so many elecampane roots, I don't think there's a single plant left around here. And we probably won't have many black raspberries this season with all the roots you dug up to mix with wort flowers for my tea.
I'll be fine. Don't worry about me, Issa assured her.
but Ayla noticed the relief from the medication was temporary at best. The old woman had been doctoring herself with the plants for years. Her tuberculosis had progressed too far for them to be very effective anymore. "Make sure you go outside on sunny days and rest a lot," Ayla urged. "There won't be much work to do around here. There's plenty of food and wood. Zaugendorf can keep the fire going to keep animals and evil spirits away, and Abba can do the cooking."
"Yes, yes," Isa agreed. "Hurry now. Brun's ready to start."
Ayla fell into her customary place at the rear, while everyone looked at her and waited. "Ayla," Isa motioned, "no one can start until you get in your right place." Sheepishly, Ayla moved to the front of the group of women. She had forgotten her new status. Her face turned pink with embarrassment as she stepped in line ahead of Abra. She was uncomfortable. It just didn't seem right for her to be first. She waved an apologetic signal to the mate of the leader, but Abra was accustomed to her second place. It seemed strange, though, to see Ayla in front of her instead of Isa. It made her wonder if she would be going to the next clan gathering. Isa and the three people too old to make the trip accompanied the clan as far as the ridge and stood watching after them until they were small dots on the plain below. Then they returned to the empty cave. Abba and Dorv had missed the last clan gathering and were almost surprised they were alive to miss another. But it was the first time for Zaug and Isa. Though Zaug still went out with his sling occasionally, he returned empty-handed more often now, and Dorv couldn't see well enough to go out at all. The four of them huddled around the fire at the entrance to the cave, even though the day was warm, but they made no attempt at conversation. Suddenly, Isa was overcome by a fit of coughing that brought up a large, bloody mass of phlegm. She went to her hearth to rest, and soon the others wandered into the cave and sat idly within their respective hearths. They had not been infected with the excitement of the long journey or the anticipation of seeing friends and relatives from other clans. They knew their summer would be unbearably lonely. The freshness of early summer in the temperate zone near the cave changed character on the open plains of the continental steppes to the east. Gone was the rich green foliage that filled out brush and deciduous trees, and still betrayed the new season's growth of conifers with needles a shade lighter at the tips of branches and spires. Instead, quick-rooting and sprouting herbs and grasses, already chest high, whose youthful verdancy was lost to the drab hue indeterminate between green and gold, stretched to the horizon. Thick, matted, old-season growth cushioned their steps as the clan wove their way across the illimitable prairie, leaving a temporary ripple behind, showing the way they had come. Clouds rarely marred the boundless expanse above, except for an occasional thunderstorm, more often seen from a distance. Surface water was scarce. They stopped to fill water bags at every stream, unsure if they would find any conveniently close when they camped for the night. Brun set a pace to accommodate the slower-moving members of the traveling party, but one that pushed them. They had a long way to go to reach the cave of the host clan in the high mountains of the mainland to the east. It was difficult going for Kreb in particular, but anticipation of the great gathering and the solemn ceremonies he would lead buoyed his spirits. Though his body was crippled and atrophied, and further degenerated by arthritis, it did not impair the mental power of the great magician. The warm sun and Ayla's pain-killing plants eased his aching joints, and after a time the exercise toughened the muscles even in the leg of which he had only limited use. The travelers settled into a monotonous routine, one day blending into the next with weary regularity. The advancing season changed so gradually they hardly noticed when the warm sun became a scorching ball of flame searing the steppes, turning the flat plain into a jaundiced monochrome of dun earth, buff grass, and beige rocks against a dust-laden, yellowish-drab sky. For 3 days, their eyes smarted with smoke and ashes carried by the prevailing winds from a sweeping prairie fire. They passed massive herds of bison and giant deer with huge palmate antlers, horses, onagers, and asses. More rarely, Sega antelope with horns growing straight out of the tops of their heads, slightly curved back at the tips. Tens upon tens of thousands of grazing animals supported by the extensive grassland. Long before they neared the marshy isthmus, which both connected the peninsula to the main continent and served as the outlet for the shallow, salty sea to the northeast, the massive mountain range, second highest on the earth, loomed into view. Even the lowest peaks were capped with glacial ice to halfway down their flanks, coldly unmoved by the searing heat of the plains. When the level prairie merged into low, rolling hills, dotted with fescue and feather grass, and red with the richness of iron ore, the red ochre making it hallowed ground, Brunn knew the salt marsh was not far beyond. It was a secondary and more tenuous link. The primary connection of the peninsula to the mainland was the northern one that formed part of the western boundary of the smaller inland sea. For 2 days, they struggled through putrid, mosquito-infested swamps of brackish water, broken through by occasional channels before they reached the mainland. Scrub oak and hornbeam quickly led to the cool, welcome shade of Parkland oak woods. They passed through an almost pure stand of beech, relieved by a few chestnut, and into a mixed forest dominated by oak, but including boxwood and yew, draped with clinging ivy and clematis. The lianas thinned out, but still climbed an occasional tree when they reached a belt of fir and spruce intermixed with beech, maple, and hornbeam. The western part was the wettest of the entire range and carried a dense cover of forests and the lowest snow line. They caught glimpses of forest bison and the red deer, roe deer, and elk of wooded landscapes. They saw boar, fox, badger, wolf, lynx, leopard, wildcat, and many smaller animals, but not a single squirrel. Ayla sensed something was missing in the fauna of these mountains before she realized the absence of the familiar creature. It was more than made up for by their first sighting of a cave bear. Brunn threw up his hand in a signal to stop, then pointed ahead at the monstrous shaggy Bruin rubbing his back against a tree. Even the children sensed the awe with which the clan viewed the massive vegetarian. His physical presence was impressive enough. The brown bears of their own mountains, and of these two, averaged about 350 pounds. The weight of a male cave bear during the summer, while he was still fairly lean, was closer to 1,000. In late fall, when he was fattened for winter, his bulk was much greater. He towered above the men of the clan by nearly 3 times their height, and with his huge head and shaggy coat, seemed even bigger. Lazily scratching his back on the rough bark of the old snag, he appeared unaware of the people frozen in their tracks so close by. But he had little to fear from any creature, and was simply ignoring them. The smaller brown bears inhabiting the area near their own cave had been known to break the neck of a stag with one blow of a powerful foreleg. What couldn't this huge Bruin do? Only another male during rutting season, or the female of the species protecting her cubs, would dare to stand up to him. She was invariably successful. But it was more than the tremendous size of the animal that held the clan spellbound. This was Ursus, the personification of the clan itself. He was their kin, and more, he embodied their very essence. His bones alone were so sacred they could ward off any evil. The kinship they felt was a spiritual tie, far more meaningful than any physical one. It was through his spirit that all the clans were united into one, and meaning was given to the gathering they had traveled so far to attend. It was his essence that made them clan, the clan of the cave bear. The bear tired of his activity, or his itch was satisfied, and he stretched to his full height, walked on hind legs a few paces, then dropped down on all 4 legs. Muzzle drooping close to the ground, he moved ponderously away with a lumbering gallop. For all his great size, the cave bear was basically a peaceful creature and rarely attacked unless he was annoyed. "Was that Ursus?" Ubo motioned, agog with wonder.
"That was Ursus," Kreb affirmed, "and you will see another cave bear when we get there."
"Does the host clan really have a living cave bear in their cave?" Ayla asked. "He's so big." She knew it was the custom for the clan that hosted the clan gathering to capture a cave bear cub and raise him in the cave.
"He's probably in a cage outside the cave now, but when he was young, he lived in the cave with them and was raised like a child, with every hearth feeding him whenever he wanted to eat. Most clans claim their cave bears even learn to talk a little, but I was young the time we hosted the clan gathering. I don't remember very much about it, so I can't say if that's true. When the bear is about half grown, he is put in a cage so he can't hurt anyone, but everyone still feeds him tidbits and pets him when they walk by, so he will know he is loved. He will be honored at the bear ceremony and will carry our messages to the world of the spirits," Kreb explained. They'd been told about it before,
But after seeing a cave bear, the story took on new meaning to those who were too young to remember or had never been to a clan gathering.
When can we host a clan gathering and get a cave bear to live with us?
Uba asked. When it's our turn, unless the clan whose turn it is can't. Then we can offer. But clans seldom miss the opportunity to host the clan gathering, though hunters may have to travel a long way to find a cave bear cub, and the danger from the mother bear is very great. The clan that is hosting this time is fortunate. Cave bears still live near their cave. They have helped other clans to get cave bears, but now it's their turn. There are none left around our cave, but there must have been once since the bones of Ursus were in our cave when we found it, Kreb answered.
What if something happens to the clan that is supposed to host a gathering? Our clan doesn't even live in the same cave as before, Ayla asked. If it was our turn, how would anyone know where to find us?
We'd send runners to the nearest clan to spread the news, either to tell the clans where the new cave is or to give another clan the chance.
Brunn signaled, and the clan got underway again. When they passed the tree used by the cave bear as a back scratcher, Kreb examined it closely and retrieved a few tufts of hair still caught in the rough bark. He wrapped them carefully in a leaf held in his teeth, then tucked them away in a fold of his wrap. The hair from a living wild cave bear would make powerful charms. The giant conifers of the lower foothills were replaced by shorter, sturdier upland varieties as they ascended, opening up to breathtaking views of the glistening mountaintops they had seen from a distance as they crossed the plains. Birch thickets appeared, and low-trailing juniper, and rosy pink azalea, whose many flowered blossoms were just beginning to bloom, splashing the primary green of nature with bright color. A multitude of wildflowers added more shades to the palette of vibrant hues. Spotted orange tiger lilies, mauve and pink columbine, blue and purple vetch, light lavender iris, blue gentian, yellow violet, primrose, and whites in a diversity of shapes. The southern mountain range, like the one at the lower tip of the peninsula, which was folded during the same orogeny, was a refuge for the flora and fauna of a continent during the Ice Age. Occasional chamois made an appearance, and heavy-horned mouflon. They were almost into the scrubby dwarf trees of mountainous taiga bordering the high meadows of low sedges and grass before they came to a well-worn path that traversed a steep incline. The men of the host clan had much farther to go before they reached the open plains north of the mountains to hunt, but the proximity of cave bears made the place so lucky they were willing to accept the inconvenience. It also made them more adept at hunting the elusive forest animals. The people running to greet the newly arriving clan when they first saw Brunn and Grad appear around a bend in the trail stopped short at the sight of Ayla. The training of a lifetime could not prevent the shocked stares. Her position in front of the women as the travel-weary clan filed silently to the open space near the cave caused a flurry of speculation. Kreb had warned her, but Ayla wasn't prepared for the sensation she caused, nor was she prepared for the throng of people. Over 200 stunned individuals crowded around to see the strange woman. Ayla had never seen so many people in her life, much less in one place. They stopped in front of a huge cage of stout poles sunk deep in the ground, lashed firmly together. Inside was another of the massive bears they had seen on their way, this one even bigger. Hand-fed for 3 years with a superabundance that kept him placid and tame, the gigantic cave bear lolled in lazy indolence within the fenced enclosure, almost too fat to stand up. It had been a labor of devotion and reverence for the small clan to maintain the huge bear for so long, and even the many gifts of food, implements, and furs brought by the visiting clans could not make up for the effort it took. But there wasn't a single person who didn't envy the members of the host clan, and every clan eagerly awaited its turn to take on the same task and reap the spiritual benefits and status of the great honor. The cave bear waddled over to see what was causing the commotion, hoping for more handouts, and Uba crowded in closer to Ayla, as much overwhelmed by the crush of people as by the bear. The leader and the magician of the host clan approached them and made gestures of greeting, quickly followed by an angry question. "Why have you brought one of the others to our clan gathering, Brunn?" the leader of the host clan motioned.
"She is a woman of the clan, Norg, and a medicine woman of Issa's line," Brunn returned more calmly than he felt.
A murmur rose from the watching people and a flash of excited hand signals.
That's impossible, the Mogur gestured. How can she be a woman of the clan? She was born to the others. She is a woman of the clan, the Mogur repeated, just as adamantly as Brunn. He fixed the host clan's